At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Humane Podcast, your tech insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-first world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and tech leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprises. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Humane, the Tech Insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprise. On this week's episode, we're featuring Martin Musol, who is an AI expert, founder, and CEO of GenerativeAI.net. Martin most recently was the Gen AI lead for EMEA for Infosys and has a deep history building in the generative AI ecosystem. Martin, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hello, David. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, it's so exciting that this year in 2024, we're seeing so much evolution in the space. But as you and I have both been data leaders, we've seen so much change in the last 10 years. Love to hear maybe for our listeners a little bit about like your background and what's led you up in the industry until today.
So I started talking about generative AI already in 2016 when I went on a conference in Milano, Italy. And I still remember the title. It was Generative AI, How the New Advancements in AI Improve the Products We Build. I was just talking sort of what can happen in the future. Yeah, when it comes to AI image generation, these were very low quality images that I have shown, yeah, highly pixelated. I didn't even talk about language generation because the language models were not even near to quality. So my imagination didn't get sparked enough to talk about it. But there are already 3D object generation by Stanford and so forth. And I sort of like presented like a broad scope of potential generative AI solutions and how this can affect our products and also services. Yeah, that was 2016. I felt that it's quite interesting. Also, I must say 2014, the paper came out by Ian Goodfeller on generative adversarial networks. And this sparked my whole interest in the space. And I was always interested in AI, but this was sort of like the focused area in AI. And then 2018, I founded GenerativeAI.net, and I built the world's first generative AI online course on the topic. And on Hacker News and Reddit, it went quite viral. And I got a lot of follower, which was quite great. Yeah. Because I'm a data scientist by training, studied at the Technical University of Munich, I really tried to make this also my full-time job. Working at IBM, the business cases and the use cases weren't still not fully there. I'm speaking 2020, 21. So I, of course, had to still work with classical AI solutions. But then with Infosys Consulting, I finally could make the move to 100% into generative AI solutions. Of course, ChatGPT underlined all of this. And I was the generative AI lead for Europe for Infosys. And yeah, worked with plenty of companies. We have built RAG systems, yeah, retrieval augmented generation systems, like these intelligent chatbots. We have built other generative AI solutions that I'm also happy to talk about, of course, on a confidential note. And my latest update is that I quit my job at Infosys, and I'm now diving fully in business building myself. I'm the founder, as I said, the founder of GenerativeAI.net. We do consulting there, sort of like continue with that. But also I'm building a startup right now called Mahan AI, where we experiment with AI agents, sort of the next progression of generative AI. And lastly, parallel to all of my work, I also wrote a book, Generative AI, Navigating the Course to the Artificial General Intelligence Future, so AGI. And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to our conversation.
A lot of great things that you've been up to, Martin, and things that you're continuing to build. A lot to unpack there, and I appreciate us getting a nice agenda for our discussion today and for our listeners. First, it's so excited to have, you know, another advocate from the university, Technical University Munich. For many of our listeners, they may know that back in 2020, we featured Christoph Lütke, where we were talking about responsible AI is needed for explainable AI systems. So definitely one of the leading universities, I'd say, in Germany, and it's great to see a lot of alumni and leaders from the space. And maybe dialing into what you shared early on, it's so fascinating to think back to 2016 and Ian Goodfellow. I think so many people in the Google and non-Google sphere know that GANs was just everything for so many years. And maybe much like yourself, I remember leading a lot of enterprise data science and AI courses where we had whole sections dedicated to GANs. And it was such a fascinating topic. Could you share with the audience more about what do you think is so special about GANs and how that evolution has changed to this new movement we're seeing with modern Gen AI today?
So Ian Goodfellow in 2014, he suggested a framework where we have basically two neural networks that are training, working against, like, adversarial to each other, but getting better along the way, along the training. So while the one neural network generates some data, the other neural network is the discriminator and tries to identify, is that data fake or real? And then it gets alternating real and generated data to evaluate. And in that fashion, you train these two neural networks in parallel. And while the discriminator gets better in understanding what if a data generated data, image, or what have you, or 3D object is actually synthetic or real, the generator at the same time gets better in generating the samples. And it's a super fascinating and also quite complex topic in detail to really come up with that architecture. But at some point, I think if you look at the submissions, the paper submissions on archive or other peer-reviewed scientific papers, you will see that it really, since 2014 it started, so there were almost no other alternatives to the vanilla GAN, to the original GAN. But then 2015, slightly, yeah, and 2016, we had already like an explosion of GANs or GAN versions that have been submitted. So it was really a very explosive adaptation of that architecture. And so my online course, to be also honest, was very much GAN heavy. It was a very GAN heavy online course, the first one. But when we look at language generation, and also image generation, but most like, okay, image generation. And I would distinguish between sequential data generation and parallel data generation. And when we look at sequential data generation, such as text, but also sounds, video, so basically parallel data, so images in sequence, yeah, the consistencies that have to be met and so forth, we see that the transformer really took over. And the ultimate, I'm not sure if you can say it like this. I'm not fully like an English native. Yeah, I'm German. But the nail in the coffin for GANs was basically the ChatGPT then, where they utilized GPT-3. So the third version of a generative pre-trained transformer. Yeah. So a transformer architecture. And they basically, like with ChatGPT, really like showed how well it works in a conversation and basically for text and sequential information. So there's like, that's the current state of the art. When we look at currently established solutions of language models are typically transformers. But I also must say, as a little side note, there is a new challenger on the horizon, and that is the Mamba architecture. In case you haven't heard about it, it's a steady state system of a language model that already shows better performance in sort of like lab setups for faster generation and longer forecasting of words. Yeah, so Mamba is already quite strong, but of course, when we look at hardware such as Grok, yeah, but also NVIDIA, the GPUs, like they try to accommodate the transformer architecture now more and more. So there are like huge investments into making transformer language models work faster and better. But I think ultimately or that Mamba, I'm pretty sure that Mamba will be a big challenge for the transformer world. And then, of course, we have on the parallel data generation, we have stable diffusion. So this is what Stability AI has worked on with part of a German university team, so the LMU, Ludwig Maximilian University, also from Munich, by the way. And at Stability AI, they have open sourced the stable diffusion algorithm. And I think very soon we are getting the third version of stable diffusion. But that's TBD because Emad Mostak, the CEO of Stability AI, resigned. So let's see.
I think it's great that you've shared, Martin, with us, you know, the background, right? It's almost like the work that Ian Goodfellow has done around GANs is this like precipice of allowing the new architecture to start. And I think what I've noticed is for some reason, and I'd love your opinion on this, people are so dialed into LLMs. They're like, it's the future. It's the next gold. It's this gold rush in modern data stack. But like, as you just rightfully noted, we've seen such a rich history of different transformer type architecture dating back to the mid-2010s. And there's been so many counter architectures and approaches to it. And now, most notably with the rise or the recreation of this modern generative AI movement, which is being led by transformers via LLMs, it's not the only game in town. You mentioned about Mamba, which is a, you know, very exciting new development we've been seeing recently that could be a challenger to transformers. I'd love to see if you could double click into that and share more with our learners. What is Mamba versus transformers?
So for me, it's also very, very new. And I very recently attended an AGI meetup. It's called AGI meetup, but what's basically happening there, it's a very scientific meetup where they really discuss papers. So the most interesting concept that we have discussed last time was the Mamba paper and also its benefits. And what it basically does, as I said, right, it's like a steady state system. So you can basically think of it as, so they have taken analogies from physics. When you have like a weight and a spring, and then you basically have, and a force, and then you can see that like things are sort of like circulating. And as an analogy, they have used this in the mathematics in the background of the Mamba paper. To go fully in depth here, I think it's quite, it might be a bit complex. And on the other hand, I'm also like partially shaky on that end. But what they have taken is basically the analogy to a physics steady state system with weight and a spring to increase the velocity of forecasting words, statistically. So if we basically look at ChatGPT right now and we ask under GPT-4 to print out a text, roughly of 1,000 tokens, this really takes some time. I mean, of course, we speak about seconds to low minutes, but ultimately it has to be immediate print. And a Mamba solution is able to do that because it utilizes the steady state circular analogy. Basically, it's extremely fast and has also the capability to not only predict the next word, but predict the next set of thoughts. This suggests, and we are still super early with that with Mamba, and maybe it's not Mamba, maybe it's another version of it, or the idea will be taken. But it's clear that there is a development in that direction, where we not only predict the next word, but really much more sophisticated, more forward thinking.
Yeah, I think this is so great that you're talking about it, Martin, because it's so new, but we could think back to this like 2014 to 2016 timeframe when continuous bag of words was becoming big and RNNs and CNNs, right, and all these different techniques that were used for sequencing and words and the modern like word to vec that was so hot only 5 to 8 years ago.
Right.
And it double clicking into my comment earlier that a lot of the modern Gen AI stack is that people see magic, right? You query a ChatGPT-4 or a Claude Opus 3 and it looks like magic. But to the common audience, they're often not aware that there's been thousands of different architectures in the last 10 years around different transformers and different sequences and different algorithms within the networks just to get to where we're at. And a lot of it has taken probably thousands of papers that we've seen as Archive has this platform for people sharing their reproducible results and data science and AI. It's scaled so much. I think just in the last year and a half, there's been at least a couple thousand papers written around the topic LLM, which has shown the great interest we're seeing in the space now.
100%, yeah. And I think the beautiful thing is now also that, first of all, there's so much knowledge, open source, readily accessible for everyone around the world. And if you don't understand what's written there because it's just extremely complex, you can always take that information in these papers and upload it to a language model and say, yeah, please explain it to me as if I'm 10. And then in the next step, you say, please explain me this keyword or that. What does this mean? This, and you can have a dialogue with a research paper and understand and then ultimately also use these tools to implement these solutions. So I think it's very beautiful. And we haven't ever had a time that is so good for potential founders. Yeah, the knowledge is accessible. The expertise is even accessible. You don't need to have an interview with an expert. You can have the conversation with a language model and feed it the papers and the context. And in the same time, you can also use it for coding and building things. It's fantastic.
Now, there's definitely a lot of excitement around development in the modern Gen AI stack. And earlier during our show, you called out Grok, which is a very exciting company from former leading engineers on Google's TPU team that have now built, you could almost say, like a European version of perhaps NVIDIA meets OpenAI or things in those kind of parallels. And I think it's such a fascinating challenger because it wasn't always like this. I think maybe even 5 years ago, like NVIDIA wasn't winning the space. GPUs wasn't everything. But now it seems to have gone all that direction. And there's such a large cost of time for compute and dollars, which perhaps is creating the opportunity for challengers to help support data processing. Perhaps like to hear your context on Grok or other challenger chip companies supporting the Gen AI movement.
Yeah, that's a very good question. And Grok, especially the founder is Jonathan Ross. And I think he is an extremely capable person. I've heard an interview with him. And he is not a college dropout. He's even a high school dropout because he was already going into entrepreneurship so early and has now built sort of like Grok, which challenges or aims to challenge NVIDIA in a sense, but not on the same battlefield, on a different battlefield. To challenge NVIDIA is almost impossible because they are just so powerful and with their GPUs, and they are also moving up the value chain towards the clients, that's also what they are building. They are very strong in the Gen AI movement. When I was talking in my online course, basically every second topic, I had to present something from NVIDIA because they have been the ones using GANs for some low-hanging fruits. Yeah, so they are extremely strong in the AI and, of course, in the computing realm. And Grok is, however, a challenger in the sense that they can basically calculate or generate AI results much faster through. I didn't fully understand how they do it on the technical level, but they are multiple thousand percent faster than GPUs coded with some CUDA kernels.
Sure. And we don't have to dive deep into the full architecture, of course, here. I know in Humane, we're always thinking about the business and machines, but I think the key takeaway, right, is that as we move forward in the next 10, 20, 50 years, chips and data and real-time insights is everything. And because of that, we're going to need to develop new architectures and new systems to support all the devices. Because I think what I've seen, one of the biggest struggles with modern LLMs, if you're using anything from Perplexity to OpenAI to Anthropic to Falcon to Mistral to Llama 3, whichever technique you're using, the speed of token output is not where it needs to be. So if you run some quick summarization task on a 3-page PDF it'll be very fast, you know, 30, 50, 80 tokens per second. But once you start expanding that context window, we're seeing a lot of delay in the token output. And I think now at this current point where we're recording in the first half of 2024, there's been a renewed interest around infinite context windows and other techniques to speed that up. But perhaps that's an area that companies like Grok and others are trying to solve for so that we can have real-time data applications.
Right. And also, it is a generation of token velocity is not only when we communicate and we want to read, yeah, like even if this is fast that's or slow, yeah, this might be even fine. But what we will see more and more, and this is also what I'm diving into in my book, is that we see these multi-agent frameworks that are basically in a swarm intelligent setup solving problems. Yeah, this is also what my company is based on. But some people even talk already about, as an analogy, that we are actually already having GPT-5 when we use GPT-4 language models, or Claude 3 Opus, which is, I think, even slightly better than GPT-4 Turbo, at least in my experience. But when we use them as an AI agent, yeah, with also with function calling and accessing data, and you can also throw RAG, retrieval augmented generation, into it, and then this whole in a multi-agent framework so that they can communicate with each other, we then have to produce much more tokens, and there is much more communication, cross-communication happening. And you can have these multi-agent frameworks, not only with like two agents, but can be with three, four, five. And who knows where this is going, yeah? And the good thing is in these multi-agent frameworks, you can assign them different roles, yeah? The one is a Python developer, the other one is a project manager, the other one is a quality assurance guy. Then you have the boss who is like overseeing the strategy and giving all of these different roles, and they have all to exchange tokens with each other. So this velocity, just to come back to what you mentioned, the velocity of generating tokens is absolutely key. And it's a very exciting topic. And I think on the computing part, as well as on the software part, we see lots of developments happening.
Yeah, these developments are incredibly exciting. And Martin, as you mentioned, you've been working on and releasing your new book about generative AI, navigating the future as we're moving towards AGI. Could you share with us a little bit of teaser of what are some of the core concepts or what's exciting about this new book that you've released?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking that. What I did is that I wanted to make it accessible not only for AI experts or people that are already working in AI, but for everyone who is excited about AI and basically an enthusiast, tech enthusiast. So that's why the first chapter is about the past of, so what has happened. What is AI in a nutshell? And then looking to the past. And in fact, we had the first chatbot in 1965 by Joseph Weizenbaum. The chatbot was super interesting. So when you were writing a sentence and you said a keyword such as like family, then the chatbot asked based on that word family, said then, hey, well, how is your relationship with your family? You know, and then mimicked sort of like an intelligent conversation. Was mind-blowing back then at the time. Of course, now we know, yeah, it's quite a simple engine behind that. And there are a couple of other wins, but also AI winters where basically nothing has happened and AI has been sort of doomed a bit. Yeah? But I'm basically flying over the, providing a bird's eye perspective of the history. Then I'm looking into what's happening right now. And as we already discovered, it's not only language generation, but it's also image generation, it is sequential data generation, yeah, like voice, music, sound, generative design of certain objects, yeah, we see it with chair, but we see also this with architecture. There is a AI architect, Tim Fu, who is producing extremely intriguing architectures. We see that also in, yeah, I'm talking about AI agents that are happening right now, video generation. So we saw what OpenAI Sora has done, yeah, because it's not ultra HD, but I think it's 2K, not 4K, what it can generate. And it only gets better from here on. Synthetic data generation, but also I'm talking about the science of it. Yeah. So what I mean with, or the science applications of it. So where are generative AI solutions, language models, transformer basically adapted transformer, where are they helping in science? So we look at protein folding. We look also in generating vaccines, like in silico AI is doing, for instance. And there are really, really great applications. And I really like span it open, like I fan out and what is existing. And based on that fanned out application field, what I then do is I'm basically guiding. I think this is my personal gold nugget, I would say, in the book, that I then basically guide through a process on how, along all of these like different application fields, how to find the untapped fields. And it's actually, there are actually so many untapped fields once you really look into it, and you also utilize the papers that have been published so far. As we also said, yeah, if you take these papers, you can really find so many great application fields. I call it the untapped potential of generative AI. And just to complete what else is in the book, I'm then also talking about the exponential behaviors of computing and also investments. We have the money allocation, which also then also draws talent into it. And that's like we see lots of these exponential behaviors now converging here. And that's what we have. It feels like such a hot topic and is to a degree also a bit overhyped, I'd say. So a reality and expectation is, I think there's quite a gap now. Actually, I also have a chapter on the ethical concerns and the societal implications of generative AI, so touching upon bias and fairness, misinformation, privacy, and also the dependency on AI, which is also a real thing. Speaking there out of what I've experienced with clients and what I've seen a lot. A lot is also designed for dependency on AI. And lastly, then I'm looking into AGI, artificial general intelligence, and I'm calling it AGI Insight. But where the horizon exactly is, that's I think there's lots of debate, of course. Everything in the future, there's a lot of debate around. We don't know. We cannot pinpoint exactly and give guarantees. But I'm definitely talking about what seems to be the path towards that tech AI milestone at the horizon. And I'm talking about multimodal, multitasking, and multisensory, yeah, that this is important. Then I'm talking about the embodiment of AI, so robots. We have seen lots of collaborations between AI companies and robot companies. For instance, Amazon has deployed 750,000 robots already, humanoid robots. It's super interesting what's happening there. And ultimately, I'm talking about how autonomous AI agents and in a multi-agent framework sort of are unlocking the problem solving of AI. And it's very, very exciting. Yeah. The last 2% of the book is looking, because I heard actually quite often that, yeah, innovation is, you know, there's only a limit to it, like at some point, like what else do you want to do? But I think it's quite boundless where the future can go. And there are these Kardashev scales, yeah, where they're even talking about the type one civilization and type two civilization and so forth. And in all of these developments, I still think that humans find their place, and I make a case for that in the book, that humans will still find their place and will be irreplaceable. Yeah, that's basically my book in a nutshell.
It's a great book to dial into for learners who want to, as you share, Martin, not only get a great cursory or deep dive overview on the ecosystem, but see where it's going towards. And you've shared a lot of great knowledge, gold nuggets in the last few minutes. I think a couple to double click into. One of them, of course, around, you mentioned Amazon, which I think in early Q2 2024, it was, you know, shared that in the warehouses and factories, there's been now about 750,000, you can call it humanoid robots, that are supporting different types of workflows, everything from moving packages to sorting packages. But I think the context that we often fail to remember is that when we group these robots as a humanoid, it may be easy to visualize that every single one is literally a human like you and I, but it could be something as simple as an iRobot cleaning the floor, or a little machine that has, you know, sensors and batteries and moves packages. So there's so much going on with these devices, and they might be in our physical homes or they might be in the workplace, though it seems like 2024 is shaping up to be a year where a lot more of these human-assisted devices are turning online.
Right. Very exciting.
Yeah. And beyond the devices, I know something you've called out is about the rise of RAG systems. Myself being a data product leader who builds out a lot of insights, and these are often through dashboards and through other tools that have API integrations, you often find this a very cognitively challenging task for a variety of reasons, some of that being infrastructure, some of it being the declarative definition, and other parts being tying application together. But I know you've mentioned that you're working on some exciting projects and you've done some work in the space. Martin, can you perhaps share with us why do you think RAG systems are also such a hot topic this year?
Yes, they are a hot topic. I already started implementing that for clients last year. These are retrieval augmented generation architectures, RAG, basically perform on the data that you plug in to these architectures, they perform a semantic search on it. So if we think about in the simplest way, there is a chatbot. You have a question, like if someone knows maybe Perplexity AI, you have a question. And then this question, the query basically gets then mapped through a semantic search against your data that you have. The data is before that being indexed and chunked and vectorized also. Everything is happening in the vector space for sake of velocity. It's faster to compare vectors with each other than word by word. And then you retrieve the top 5, top 10 most relevant chunks to the query, embed this with a sophisticated prompt engineering. This is also where the prompt engineering comes into play, where you assign professional prompt engineering includes that you assign a persona to the language model. You give it the context information, and the context information in this context would be the chunks that you have just now retrieved that are closest to the question that has been asked by the user. And you give this as a context with it, but not the vectors. Now you reverse the operation and you basically take the chunks. And you then also specify in what way you want to have a certain question answered or problem solved. You can also give it like a stepwise introduction. And ultimately, you then tell it in what format you would like to have the answer. And in that sense, it then you send it with that prompt engineering template filled out, you send it to the language model. It can be via an API. Yeah. So let's say GPT-4 Turbo via the OpenAI API, or you do it to Claude 3 Opus, or you have it or you use an open source model. Yeah. That you maybe have on-prem. Yeah. Or there are many different options. And then you retrieve the answer from the language model. This can also happen in multi-step. Yeah. It can be like you ask me what else is missing. And what else might be missing? And you can have this multi-step approach with a multi-step conversation with a language model. Super powerful, by the way. And this is basically driving a lot of professional tools these days. I'm also implementing that with a couple of clients on the side right now, trying to finance my startup with these activities to a degree. And we were also talking earlier about the context windows. So Claude 3 Opus, for instance, has already a context window of 200,000 token, which results, I think, in something like 220,000 words. Then you have Gemini, and the Opus works quite well. So they have shown in a paper, Anthropic has shown in a paper, that they can really retrieve certain information within this super long context window. They can retrieve it quite reliably. Looking at Gemini, where there's a context window, I think, of 1 million token. So far, to my knowledge, it's not working very well. It is also quite a challenge to have such an extended context window and to recall the data perfectly. Yeah, and this is definitely where a RAG system is much better. And basically, it extends the context window infinitely. You can have all kinds of data. You can plug in terabytes of data and can still recall the information much better. So it's a great tool. Ultimately, I think RAG systems could not be the case in the long-term future, and language models might handle all of it. And who knows, maybe even the Mamba paper that I have mentioned earlier might be able to do that. And super powerful function, though.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating, Martin, that you mentioned, for example, that this 200,000 token context window, it might be like a book such as Atlas Shrugged. And if you think about the million token context window out of Gemini in, you know, early 2024, this might be like the entire catalog of the Harry Potter books, right? So that's kind of how we could look at how many pages and context there is. And while it sounds like a lot, honestly, it's not, right?
Exactly.
If you do research papers, it could be just the beginning. And so this begs the question to leading up to what you're doing now, building a startup in the space around agents. Of course, this is one of the other hot topics this year around, can we evolve from simply you and I querying on demand, each request one off, or having an API call? Could we actually perhaps maybe expand that into multiple steps and increase the total amount of actions that can be performed? If you could share with our listeners, give us a little preview of what you're building with your new startup.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm very happy to share that. I think it's a very exciting idea. I mentioned the words multi-agent framework already now multiple times. It is really, really powerful because what is happening is that we have single language models. So little AIs, it doesn't only have to be a language model. I think for simplicity, it's better to just talk about language models. Also, when I was discussing the RAG model just now, I referred to language models, but it doesn't have to be. It can also be multimodal with visual information. Same in these multi-agent framework. My company is called Mahan AI. As of now, I think it also, I want to have it like, I want to keep it like this. So you have single language models or visual language models or AI models that communicate with each other to solve a problem. So think about, so I'm coming from consulting very strongly. Yeah, I've worked at IBM Consulting. I was at Infosys Consulting. I have worked many years with clients and I understand how the consulting world works. How it works is clients have some problem. These problems can be simple problems. They can be also very complex problems. Very simple problem can be like literally a couple of days. One developer is writing a Python script that changes the format of an Excel sheet scheduled on a regular basis or checks something. And then more complex is, for instance, building in a RAG system. This is already much more complex, but it's not the most complex thing in the world. So they're also... There's even, I would put it to mediocre hard, and then there's the room for much more complex projects, bigger. And so in consulting, you would go in with a team and you would first gather the requirements. You would ask the clients, okay, so what exactly is your problem? Then you ask the right questions to understand how you can solve the client's issue in a tech way. Yeah, you basically translate it into a tech stack and then you talk to your developers. So I was the tech lead also for a long time. And so you talk to the developers, you please develop the front end, can you please do this? And maybe you even have a project manager who, or the tech lead is also doing it in a hybrid version, who is basically orchestrating the team so it works well. And Mahan AI is a set of AI agents that in the future, we would like to replace that. First, we start with simple projects, but like for instance, an Excel sheet, improving the format of an Excel sheet. This is where you have the team of AI agents that ask for the requirements. What exactly is the problem? They take it on and develop together a solution, a Python script that can solve that issue. Or they develop together even longer term thinking. They develop a RAG system. And while IT consulting fully with humans takes maybe half a year, now it will take half a day. And you have a much higher frequency in the feedback of the client. The client is basically prompting then the set of AI agents. So this is sort of what Mahan AI is about. And there is much, much more to it. And I'm super excited. Very soon I'm going to raise money for that.
I love this. And I can't wait to hear more of the story, Martin. Spending a lot of my time between New York City and Silicon Valley, I definitely think what you're building is on the precipice of what's next in the generative AI economy. So very excited to hear all about the gold nuggets that you've shared, a lot of knowledge that you've transferred today, no pun intended, to our listeners. And really appreciate you joining us on the show. Martin, I'm Uziel, an AI expert, founder, and CEO of GenerativeAI.net, out with his most recent book so that you can learn all about the generative AI economy. It's called Generative AI Navigating the Course to the Artificial General Intelligence Future. Martin, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, David, so much. It was a great conversation.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.